Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The best things happen after dark. Nightclubs are the ultimate space for self-expression, escape, music, socializing, and forgetting for a moment the outside world. They're a place to discover ourselves, find new friends, and fall in love. As humans, we like to dance to a beat, and there's nothing like a good night out. I'm Jody Harsh. I'm a DJ, producer, and occasional club promoter. I know how to tear up a dance floor, and for this podcast, I want to explore with my guests how club culture and going out has shaped their identities and informed their work. I've got us the guest list and cue jump sorted, so we'll delve right into the hazy memory banks and hit the floor. This is Life of the Party. This episode's guest is an icon from the countrywide club circuit to TV stardom, both in and out of drag. This is an unparalleled career in popular culture. We knew her as Lily Savage, the rough broad you wouldn't want to mess with, and we know him as lovely Paul O'Grady, a British entertainment institution. Paul, you are the OG, and this is your Life of the Party. How's it going?
God help me. All right, fine, yes. All this can... Everybody seems to have a different system, you know, for whether it's a podcast or you're doing something on telly. So, and of course, I am not the best with computers. I mean, I'm really not. And I end up like on a Valium drip by the time I go on air because I've had to get changed. I had a jumper on before, sweating like a hooer in confession, looking for the laptop.
Well, you are we're recording loud and clear. It's all good.
Oh, jolly good. As long as you can hear me. No, yeah. I'm fine. How are you getting on with the new lockdown?
I'm all right. Yeah, you know, not ideal, but getting through it. We can still talk about the good times, about the parties.
Oh, exactly. Do you know what I found here? Well, I was tidying up today. I had a, you know, as you do in lockdown, you chuck all your clothes out.
Yeah.
And you go mad. I found a Boys, you know, Boys.
Oh, Boys magazine. Yes, the clubbing Bible.
That's it. From the 16th of December, 1991.
Wow.
And on the front cover is Lily Savage gets her claws out for Christmas. And I'm holding a moggy. And your chance to win Jimmy Somerville's racing bike and give to AIDS charities.
That's
nice. It's a different world, isn't it? Isn't it lovely?
And I love that.
And it's packed full of clubs and pubs from yesteryear. Most of them have gone now.
Wow.
But I forgot how many there were. There were so many.
Yeah. First of all, though, I want to start at the very beginning. Was there much of a party atmosphere in the O'Grady house growing up?
I think that, you see, my mum's side were all Merchant Navy, so they were away for a long time. So, of course, when they came back from sea, you know, it was what they called jars out, so that, you know, there'd be a lot of socialising going on. You know, somebody get a bottle of booze or whatever, that'd be in the kitchen and there'd be a do. So there was lots of that. And I suppose there was, really. When I was very young, there was. You know, but as they all got older, of course, all that stopped.
Yeah.
Didn't get to see anymore or anything like that.
And you frequented Liverpool, which was a working dock.
Oh, my God, what? I mean, you know.
Lots of sailors.
Oh, well, this is it. It was a thriving port, you see, in my day when I was a teenager. So, of course, when I discovered clubs, well, that was it for me. I mean, I've always worked in clubs, you know, either behind the bar or on what was laughingly known as a stage in most clubs.
Yeah.
And it's in my blood, club and pub life, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Even at the age of 17, you know, and if I had an office job, I had a job in a club called the Sandpiper afterwards in Birkenhead, you know, it's 2 a.m.
Right.
And so I genuinely have a real love for clubs and pubs. I love them. I just love the atmosphere. So I suppose, Liverpool, of course, heaving with sailors. There was a club on every corner and a boozer on every corner.
Right.
And the gay scene was... the Bear's Paw, which was supposedly the classier one. I worked behind the bar in there. And then there was Sadie's Bar Royale up Rushbridge.
What went on around Sadie's then?
Well, Sadie was fearsome. So, and like, Sadie was a Liverpool legend, Sadie. You'd only have to mention Sadie to some of my era. They go, oh my God. Anyway, I don't know what Sadie's real name was, but you'd ring the bell and it was quite a flight of stairs to go up, and Sadie would open the window and stick his head out and go, are you a member? And we go, it's me, Sadie. They go, ah. And my mate, he didn't like my mate at all, and he always used to say, she pissed. I said, no, no, I'm being a bit rotten drunk. No. And we'd have to climb up these. It was something like 20p to get in, but it was packed, you know, yeah. And it was just a laugh. And certain pieces of music, if I hear Fifth Dimension, Wedding Bell Blues, I'm transported immediately back to Sadie's. If I hear Spirit in the Sky, I'm whisked back to St. Werburgh's Disco, age 14.
Wow. You were going out that young at 14?
Oh God, the school disco, St. Werburgh Social Club. Yeah, off we go. You know, and the parish priest would be there. And if you got too close when you were dancing with a girl, he'd say, separate. No, come on, separate. You're too close. You're too close. It's a bit like social distancing. Yeah. And so that's it. And we all used to love Spirit in the Sky, and the priest thought we were marvellous because we used to sing along to it, and it was all about, you know, I'm going to have faith in Jesus and all that, and when I die and they lay me to rest, and you think, oh, they're marvellous children, lovely, holy kids. And we weren't, we were swans. We'd been in the pub next door pretending we were 18. And talking like this. And ask if it's terrible drinks that we thought grown-up men drank, like brown over bitter, which was brown ale over... like, you couldn't drink it. I'd sip it, like... sit. So I was always out, you know, and not now, of course. Mm. Now I live in the depths of Kent.
Yeah. I was reading your book the other day, and I was reading about you hanging out in the International Club on Lum Lane in Bradford. And all the characters down there.
Oh, my God. There was a pub on Lum Lane called, I think it was called The Queens. And we used to work in The Queens. Rough doesn't come into it. Right. I mean, really. There's not really a word for The Queens. But they were a great crowd. And then there was the International Club on the corner.
Well, that sounds very glamorous.
Well, this was the time of the Yorkshire Ripper.
Right.
You know, so you'd be working the International Club as well. And the girls would say to me, come on, walk the lane with us. So I'd be full Lily Savage gear. And I'd go strutting me stuff down Lum Lane, you know, with all these cars cruising. And one of them pulled up once and went, get in. And I said, hang on, we haven't discussed terms first. And he went, what? Drove off like 90 mile an hour.
Do you think it was the Yorkshire Ripper?
No, I shouldn't think so, unless the Yorkshire Ripper was about 4'2", bald, with glasses like re-entry shields. I drove a Morris Minor. I mean, they were... it was strange times then, because we were working a lot in Yorkshire, you know, and so you'd work, say, Halifax, you know, a place called Mixenden, the Stone Chair, and then you'd shoot off over to, I don't know, Selby or somewhere, or, you know, I mean, so you did cover long distances every night. So, of course, you didn't get changed. You just jumped in the car in full regalia and went off to the next venue. And there were often roadblocks, you know, and the police would stop and, like, look in the back. And there's this great big blonde old scrubber sat in the back there with the fag on. And they'd say, drive on.
So you spent years just driving up and down the country from club to club performing.
Oh, I mean, there was a time where any city or town in this country, and I knew a publican. Like I'd know, because I'd either worked there or I'd been in there, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Because that was it, you know, and after you'd done your act, you'd have a drink with the landlord or you'd have a drink with the club manager. So, or some of the crowd you got to know as well. It was very social when I think about it.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't just going off and doing a gig. It was like, you know, people are being in and out of the dressing room. How are you? You know, wherever you were.
Yeah.
It was good fun.
And so was that sort of... work in men's clubs and variety clubs?
No, I only ever did a working man's club once, and that was in, where was that? Oh, God, Wakefield. And on I came, and halfway through the act, I heard this voice saying, bingo, in 20 minutes, get your tickets. I thought, charming. It was the MC. and that's what they were like. So I only ever worked one or maybe two, and we filmed in the Leighton Institute Club. That was good fun. But no, mainly I worked the gay scene.
Right.
I did a hen night once and I said never again. It was like a den of wolves, you know, when the male stripper came on. Yeah. I thought teeth marking his bum and all this business, grabbing his bits. I'm dabbing a bit of TCP on him.
I bet you've seen a lot of awful backstages as well, a lot of rough dressing rooms.
Well, you were lucky if you got one, to tell you the truth. It was either a cupboard somewhere, you know, that passed as a dressing room, and the sink was always known as the artiste lav.
Right.
Because everybody peed in the sink. It was, like, disgusting. Or you'd be in the cellar, or you'd be at the bottom of the stairs behind the bar, or you'd be in the manager's office or whatever.
Right.
You know, it was occasionally. There was a pub. It was called the Union Tavern. It's still there. It's got a different name now. And that was in Vauxhall, and that had a fabulous dressing room, you know, and a beautiful big stage with a big catwalk that went straight out into the audience. That was a great place to work. The Vauxhall's wasn't bad.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little dressing room with a sink. Yeah, and it served its purpose. The White Swan was a cupboard.
Right.
Little cupboards. Literally. You get in there and you can wash your hands and not go to the loo.
Well, that's East London, isn't it, the White Swan?
The White Swan, still going, yeah. I mean, a lot of them still are.
What about Blackpool? Did you do Funny Girls?
No, I never... Oh, yes, I did. I did a charity one night when I was up there with Bessie Legs, who's a friend of mine, Simon, who I've known for years. But the Flamingo Club, I opened.
Right.
Oh, my God. And that, like, you know, that makes me Jurassic, because that's been going since the year one.
Right.
And that was it was a top floor. That's all it was, with a bar. And you worked on the dance floor. And it was like another era when I think about it. But you used to do 3 days there, so it was great because you got 3 days in Blackpool.
Yeah, nice.
So you could go to the fair, have a mooch round. You stayed in a gay B&B, which is still going, called Trades.
Yeah.
I thought, this is a holiday with pay. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Was there a big divide between the north and south? Like, could you tell that was there a lot of difference in nightlife? Or a snobbishness?
Yeah, there was a big difference. I mean, I'd say it was, and I don't mean this, it was not rougher. It was more easygoing, I'd say, up north and down south. You know what I mean? The crowd in the pubs.
Mm.
So, like, we used to spend a lot of time in Leeds, so I was never out the New Penny. That's a pub, and that's still going. And I used to love the Penny. And there was a club over the road, I can't remember the name of it, we'd all pile in there afterwards, and it was friendlier. That's what I'm looking for. It was a lot friendlier.
Right.
Down south, it was a little bit...
A bit colder.
Bit more,
yeah.
A bit more standoffish, really, down south. You know, if you spoke to somebody at the bar down south, you think they'd assume you were chatting them up, and you weren't.
Yeah.
You know, you're just saying, can I get through, please?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I want to buy a drink, and I'm not interested.
Yeah. But Lily was born in London, wasn't she?
Yeah. And that sort of, I mean, I was in various mime acts originally. There was the Glamazons, and then we had the Playgirls, and then there was LSD, Lily, Sandra and Doris, and then I've lost track, actually, High Society, me and Adrella, and that was a combination, all sorts of acts. And they used to have a talent night. There's a pub in Vauxhall. It's gone now. It's a Starbucks. But it used to be called the Elephant and Castle. And it was the place where anyone who was barred from a pub could go and have a drink.
Right.
There was a men's hostel next door. So one bar was full of all the homeless, all in there having a drink. And then the front bar was where you worked.
Right.
And it was quite a lively place. So they had a talent night, and I was working behind the bar as usual. Always had a bar job.
In drag?
No, as myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never worked behind the bar. Oh, yes, I did once in Halifax. So go on, drag up. So I'm behind the bar in drag. So I'm feeling like an old dance hall hostess. I'll never do this again. Yeah. And anyway, I said to the manager, you know, I could do better than that about the comp here, whoever it was. So he said, well, go on then. And so the following week, up I got and just did it, you know, and that was it, really. It was never a career move.
Right.
You know, it was just really sort of something. I was waiting in social services.
Right. So that's at the Elephant and Castle. And were you well received, or did you, you know?
Yeah, I was amazed. Yeah. And I didn't like really know any jokes or anything. I just padded it on.
Right.
You know, made up, talking about things like the social, you know, shoplifting and fiddling the electricity meter. Right. You know, all that.
Because it sounds like it might have been a bit of a rough crowd down there. So do you think they could just relate to you straight away?
Oh, rough? You're joking, aren't you? Yeah, but like, mind you, Lily was the roughest thing in there, I can tell
you. Yeah, that's why you had them in the palm of your hand.
But then it got very trendy, you see, these Tuesday nights. And so you get the likes of Catherine Hamner coming down.
Wow.
And various media types and comedians and all. And I wasn't aware. And I got very friendly with Catherine. So off we went to Paris and we did a fashion show on the Seine for her. And we did a show and did various bits and pieces with her. A fashion aid at the Albert Hall. Lily in a T-shirt saying, "Feed the world." And they were such good times, you know, they really were. So the Elephant, and then of course I was poached by the Vauxhall Tavern.
Yes.
And over I went. I think they offered me an extra tenner, and being a bit of a whore, off I went. And and that was it. And I worked there for 8 years.
Yeah, because that's probably the place most associated with you before your TV fame kicked off. Would you say that was sort of your home base to sort of incubate Lily before she was unleashed onto the mainstream?
Oh, definitely, because I always say, you know, I went to the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, School of Dramatic Arts.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was a smashing pub. It still is a smashing pub. You know, it's still going strong. It's had a sort of new life now. You know, it's completely changed from what it used to be, because it was a South London working class pub.
Yeah.
You know, and they had acts on every night of the week, twice on a Saturday, on a Sunday lunch, Sunday evening. You know, it was a busy, busy pub. And I lived up the road in South Lambeth Road. So it was like our village hall. We used to meet every night, you know, if we weren't working.
Yeah.
And all your mates were there. And we had our corner that other people didn't sit in. You go over and give them the mean stare. "What are you doing in my seat? Up it."
Yeah.
And like the landlord, you know, Pat and Breeden McConnon, Pat's no longer with us now. They were like family.
Yeah.
You know, and we had lock-ins and we had funerals there and parties there and Christmases there. It was like our village hall.
Yeah. Is that story about Princess Diana and Freddie Mercury going on a night out in the RVT, is that true?
I don't know about that. To tell you the truth, the jury's out with me. I mean, really is, because one, she wouldn't go unnoticed in the Vauxhall. They'd spot her, you know.
Right.
They really would. And also, if she was with Freddie, you know, Freddie Mercury and Kenny Everett as well, well, they're going to draw attention. So there's lots of legends about the Vauxhall Tavern. Like, you know, people say, oh, it was a musical, Mary Lloyd sang there. It wasn't. It was a lorry driver's pub called the Roundhouse. And, you know, I mean, it's built on what was the Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens, guaranteed.
Oh.
So it's got a huge history of entertainment, but the pub itself, you know, was never... You know, somebody said, oh, it's called Royal because Queen Victoria popped in. I thought, why would Queen Victoria pop in an ale house in South London? Where's she been? The Oval to watch cricket? I forgot. So there's lots of legends, you know, surrounding the pub. But I mean, I love the place, the Vauxhall. I'm so fond of it. I had such good times there.
Yeah. And it almost, obviously it almost closed at one point, didn't it? And I think you were quite instrumental when helping save it, weren't you?
Well, I kicked off. Well, when Pat and Breeder left, me and Murphy were going to take it over. Anyway, the brewery turned us down because we didn't have any experience or whatever. And then it sort of went through a terrible decline, the Vauxhall, for a while. Because I remember Regina used to work it. Regina Fong had been hauled over, and I'd get the phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning. She'd be half pissed and she'd be going, "Never again, darling, never again." There's about 10 people in, just dreadful, darling. And I get all this.
And then she'd be back there the week after.
She'd be back there, God love her. But, you know, they were really lovely to her, the management. And And then, of course, it sort of took off again and became this, well, I don't know, it's a completely different animal now, the Vauxhall Tavern.
Yeah.
You know, there's cushions.
Yeah.
Cushions. One time you only ever had a cushion if somebody collapsed or to soak up the blood. And it's, you know, and they do things like, I don't know, nice meals. You know, it used to be a bag of crisps.
It's a gastropub now.
Well, I can't be doing with gastropubs. I'm sorry. I don't want to go in a pub to eat couscous and look at kids. You know, I like a traditional pub. You know, now since they stopped smoking, you walk in a pub, you smell the toilets, is the first thing. And, you know, I like really old fashioned boozes. It's like clubs. I like the drinking clubs, you know, because when we used to work at, we did a season at Madame Jojo's while the original lot went off on a holiday.
Right.
And of course, it was a time where there was loads of drinking clubs, all of them illegal. So we pile out of Jojo's, you know, 2, 3 in the morning, pile into a drinking club, pile then into Chinatown, have a Chinese meal for breakfast. And then, oh, you know, it was a vampiric life.
What time would you go for Chinese?
Be about 5 in the morning, 5 or 6.
Wow.
There was always a Chinese restaurant that was open on the corner who got to know us really well.
And you'd just pop round there in drag before you go home and take your makeup off?
No, we weren't in drag. No, we'd get changed from the club. Oh, no, we'd had enough of that. Oh, slapped up.
Yeah.
All that come off and we go, like, off we go, like, round the clubs for a drink.
So what were the other clubs? Like, just little speakeasies dotted around Soho and stuff?
They were all over the place, you know. Some of them were, like, dreadful fire hazards. And you get in there and think, I've had this if there's a fire in here. And of course, there was Jerry's. That was Jerry's, is completely legit, bottom of Dean Street. Jerry's is like a drinking club as well. And it's a legend, Jerry's. And I just hope Jerry's is still going. I really do, because I'd cry if Jerry's went. It's just further down from the French house. That used to be another one of my homes, the French. In fact, when I had the heart attack, Murphy said he went down Old Compton Street. And every homeless person said, how savage? And every bouncer on the door said, how is he? And he said, I don't believe it. He said, what kind of life are you leading? He said, the bouncer on Ronnie Scott's came running out and said, how is he?
Oh, that's amazing.
I know, because I was always out, you know, like Shadow Lounge, Review Bar, and I used to work clubs down there as well.
What were the other, in sort of the 90s, what were the other clubs? Like I guess there was the Heaven, it's always been there.
Well, Heaven used to be a roller disco, believe it or not, called Global Village.
Really?
Yeah, in the early days.
Really?
Yeah, we used to go down there and put on roller skates and break our neck. Imagine it, blind drunk, go flying around 90 mile an hour on roller skates. I mean, there were so many accidents.
There was a club at the back of Heaven as well, wasn't there?
That was called Stallions.
Right. What was that?
Was it Stallions? Yes, it was Stallions. And that used to have on a Monday night, it was called Skin 2.
Right.
And it was sort of rubber and leather fetishists, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so we go in there and, like, think, oh, this is all very... You'd be talking to somebody head to toe in a rubber cat suit with a hood. So, oh, yes, just chatting away, you know. It was really odd.
Oh, my God.
I mean, years ago, there were drinking clubs called Le Toucan. There was that. And then there was the A&B. That was a famous drinking club that was gay. And where else was there? And then, of course, there was Heaven. And underneath Heaven was a leather bar called the Cellar Bar. That was all very cruisy and dark, you know. And they had, like, sentry boxes. So you'd walk through and there'd be, you know, a fella in a vest and a leather waistcoat sort of glaring at you. Think, oh, this is terrifying.
With a hanky in his back pocket.
Oh, God, and all that business and keys and all manner of chains and all sorts of studs.
Oh, this all sounds a bit kinky for me.
So there was that. And then, of course, there was Bangs, which became G-A-Y.
Right, so that was the Astoria, yeah, of course.
Yeah, that was Colin Peters. He was a DJ there.
Was Earl's Court still a big hub of the gay scene?
There was the Colern. That was the leather bar, the Colern.
Right.
They used to have jazz on a Sunday morning, which was fabulous.
So you can go there and sort of, with your hangover.
Yeah, and then over the road was, I think it was called Brompton's, which was a bit rough. That was sort of, had a bit of a reputation for rent boys and things.
Right.
You never went in there.
Right.
And then there was somewhere around the corner, which I think was a bit dicey. I can't remember the name of it. And then there was a street called Wharfdale Street, where when the coal lane closed, because this was like half 10, 11 o'clock days, they cruise up and down Wharfdale Street, you know, carrying the bike helmets like a handbag. Yeah. I think, what is going on? And I hadn't arrived that long in London, and I'd be thinking, you know, I've come from Birkenhead and Liverpool. All this was a novelty. I think, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, it was a new, completely new world to me.
Yeah. And who were you hanging out with back in the early 90s? Like, who was in your crew when Lily first hit it?
Oh, God, there were loads of us. I mean, sadly, a lot of them are dead now. You know, this is it.
Yeah.
I mean, quite a lot, in fact.
Yeah.
Oh, there were gangs of us, and there was all the drag queens then. I mean, David Dale's still, thank God, still with us, who I speak to regularly. Regina's no longer with us. Adrella's gone. You know, Hush is gone. They've all gone. You know what I mean? But there'd always be a huge gang of us. Like, and Hush used to make the costumes and do wigs and all this business. Dollars to get the bookings, and I'd make the tapes.
Oh, so you were a bit of a team. You'd all have your sort of...
Oh, well, we were. No, we were very self-sufficient. Yeah, and off we... And Hush.
You'd all play to your strengths.
Yeah, there used to be a tour that you did years and years ago, and it was two nights in the Red Lion Music Bar in Mansfield, and then you went from there to the Falstaff in Lincoln, and then you went to, from there, which we all loved, to a hotel called the Green Hammerton just outside York, where you got a hotel room, it was luxury, and three meals a day. It was unbelievable. And it was run by Sid and Dennis. These two were fabulous, really looked after us. And that's where I learned to fire eat.
Oh.
Because the manager was an ex-stripper. Oh. Who taught me to fire. I had third-degree burns for about a month until I mastered it. I was determined to master fire eating.
An excellent skill to have, though, fire eating.
Well, it's come in handy, I can tell you, over the years. You know, when I've been called upon, I taught McFly to fire eat.
So, when AIDS struck, how did that change the scene in London?
Oh, that was terrible. You know, when that hit, because we heard all these stories about, you know, American colds affecting gay men, and they didn't know what it was. And we all thought, well, it's in America, you know, well, it doesn't bother us, as you do. And of course, it came over like a tidal wave. You know, it was just shocking. People were dropping like flies. You know, I'd be on stage in the Vauxhall or whatever pub, and you'd look, and people had what we called the look. You know, it was all of a sudden they'd gone from like really healthy looking to quite gaunt with the big starry eyes.
Mm.
And you think, oh no, God, not another. And it was odd with me, but Lily, I sort of, the dressing room in the Vauxhall became a bit of a confessional, because people would come in to me and say, I've been for a test today.
Mm.
And I'd say, oh, Anne, they go, it's positive. And I'd say, I didn't really know. We didn't know anything about it then. I'd say, well, it's only, it'll be gone shortly. So like a cold, wouldn't worry about it. Because we knew nothing about it. You know, it was when he really hit. And then we were doing shows on the wards, me and Adrella. We used to go on St. Mary's. Adrella used to dress as a matron, typically. And I'd be a hoovery nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to have the trolley with, you know, the wee bottles?
Yeah, yeah.
The cardboard wee bottles. One full of red wine, one full of white.
Entertaining.
Yeah, you know, we did. And I remember when it first hit, there was a guy I knew from the Market Tavern, seriously ill. And I went in, we knew nothing about it. And I said, what, is anything you want? And he said, I'd kill for a fag. So, because I'm in full regalia and had the handbag, because the cigs in it and all that. So I lit a fag and I gave it to him and he smoked it. He was smoking. He said, I can't smoke at all. He said, hey, oh, Lil, finish it. And I could see that, like, everyone's face, is he going to put the ciggy in his mouth? Because it was the early days. And I sort of knew this is not how you catch, this is not the way you catch this. Mm. So I took it off him quite casually and smoked it, mainly for him.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because I didn't want to go, no, I'm all right, thanks, I won't bother. Because he'd had quite enough of that before he came into hospital.
Yeah.
And in the early days on the AIDS wards, you know, you had to wear masks and things and gloves, and there was yellow tape like a crime scene all over the place.
Yeah.
And it was pretty, you know, it's, people wouldn't work on the wards because, again, they were ignorant. Nobody knew where it was coming from.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, they were bad times. I was either at hospitals or at funerals.
Right.
For about 2 to 3 years, yeah, non-stop.
So you lost a lot of friends to it?
Oh, loads, yeah, yeah. Loads. We all did, though. You know, we really, all of us did. Yeah, it was dreadful.
And Lily became a bit of an agony aunt, maybe?
Yes, yeah, and you know, and it was nice because I remember a young lad. He was a design student. Oh God, and I went to see him, and he'd gone blind, and he was almost paralysed. And he was a pretty little lad, and he had so much going for him. And he said, "I've only ever slept with one fella." I thought, God. And I said, "Why did you tell me?" He said, "I didn't tell you. I tell Lily." And I thought, maybe she's, I don't know, accessible. Maybe she can handle all these terrible things.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And that's why they confided in it, even though they knew it was me.
Yeah.
But in a different guise.
Yeah.
It was, they were very sad times. They really were, you know, it was just shocking. Yeah. It really was shocking.
And there were raids, weren't there, on some of the venues?
Oh, for God's sake. I was in more raids than Gypsy Rose Lee at one time. I mean, I remember the big raid in the Vauxhall Tavern. We had a swine of a chief police in South London. It was so homophobic. And I was in the dressing room and this copper burst in. And I said, "Are you the stripper?" Which you would do. You know, you'd think he was a male stripper.
Yeah.
And he went, "Enough of that. Come on, you out." And when I looked outside there must have been about 30 or 40 coppers all wearing rubber gloves.
Wow.
So I shouted from the top of the steps by the stage, "If you come to do the washing up." And pandemonium broke out.
Yeah.
Wow. The wagon was getting filled outside and taken to Brixton Nick. And
did you ever get arrested?
No, they didn't. They never got me, no. I never got thrown in the wagon. I was quite looking forward to it and all, going in the wagon.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And there was a couple of places I was in. There was a place in Manchester, I remember, it was raided. And the copper said to me, "Not you again." And I thought, because it was all to do, you know, with the AIDS crisis. There was a lot of homophobia going on. Gay people were to be avoided like the plague because you could catch it off them. Mm. There was all that.
And what year would this have been?
It'd have been 80s, 90s, I think. I'm looking at this boys thing where they're collecting. So I'd say it was late 80s, early 90s.
Not that long ago.
No, not at all.
30 years ago,
you know.
I often think the younger generation of gays don't know or care to know what it was like back then.
Probably not. No.
What would you say to someone new on the gay scene who may not know?
Well, you know, I'd never lecture anyone. Me, yeah. I'm no role model. I'm seen as a warning.
Right,
it's true. And so I'd just say, you know, be careful, you know. And of course, half of them are off their head on drugs. They don't know what the bloody hell they're doing. It's almost like necrophilia.
Well, yeah, hard drugs have become a massive part of the gay scene. How do you think drug use has affected the community?
I mean, it's for a start, some of this stuff, I didn't even, MDF, is it? MDF, what's it called?
MDMA. Yeah.
Is that the stuff you drink?
Oh, GHB.
Is that that?
Yeah.
And then there's all these weird crack cocaine and all this, and you think, oh, for God's sake. I mean, I remember when I was a teenager, we used to take Pro Plus.
Yeah.
And I'd say things like, "Do you think people can tell we're off our heads? This is to go to the Wigan Casino, the all-nighters." and, you know, we'd had 3 Pro Plus, which is like a strong cup of coffee.
Yeah.
People would say, "Where have you been all night?" Yeah, and we were fine. You know, it was probably the most innocent night out, the Wigan Casino. Another great club there.
What went on there?
It was just, they played great music at the Wigan Casino, Northern Soul, you know. So you get Aretha Franklin, you wouldn't get, like, in Sadie's or any of the other clubs. Or in the Babaloo, you know, and all these. There was Uglies, the Beachcomber, all these clubs.
Yeah.
And, of course, you wouldn't get that kind of music there. But they were the very early days. I must have been about 16 when I was going to the Wigan Casino.
Wow.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Lily became a TV sensation.
Well, I never intended that to happen.
Yeah. Did you have to water Lily down? Because she was quite outrageous.
Well, you see, I couldn't get... They wouldn't touch me with the barge pole in the early days because of that. You know, they think, oh, no, she's too rough, you know. And also, you were labelled pub act.
Yeah.
And even worse, he's gay.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, you had quite a lot of... It's not like now, you know, with the drag race and all that, where it's so much easier.
Yeah.
Well, it's plain sailing now. Those days, forget it. You know, you had a load of obstacles to overcome. It was a lot tougher.
Yeah.
So, I'd do the odd thing, and normally I'd be on, like, I don't know, regional telly at 4 a.m. or something like that, or Channel 4, doing stuff for them. And then really, I think it was sort of the Edinburgh Festival when I went up there, because I had no idea. I just saw it as another job, you know, lousy paid one for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So, and I had to be, like, convinced to go. I said, I ain't going up there for 3 weeks for that, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got convinced, you know. So off I went. I got nominated for the Perrier. And I got the phone call in the morning about 7 o'clock. And of course, I'd only been in about 2 hours. So I staggered to the phone. And it was Nika Burns. And she said, you've been nominated for the Perrier. You've been nominated for the Perrier. And I put the phone down, went back to bed. And Murphy said, what was that about? And I said, I haven't got a clue. Nika Burns banging on about fizzy water. Went back to sleep. So I had no idea. And there was me, Jack D, Eddie Izzard, Frank Skinner. Oh, what was his name? He was an American guy, lovely. He was done up as a clown. And he was very, very clever, though. And it was just a great time. And then from that, I sort of started getting dribs and drabs. You know, I go on Richard and Judy and stuff, and I'd never swear. You know, I always told them that, and I never did. You know, I was always good as gold.
Yeah.
I'd be very racy.
Yeah,
you know, and I'd be on Des O'Connor Tonight, and that was a really big show in its day. O'Connor Tonight, it was huge.
Parky.
Yeah, Oh, I used to love doing Parky.
Oh, yeah, and I was watching you on Parky the other day when I was researching. I've never laughed so much, sat in front of YouTube watching you.
Well, he'd egg me on Parky, you know, he was a bit of a bugger. Yeah. I mean, really, he'd egg me on, you know, because he'd say to me, what do you think of when poor old Wayne Rooney, all the business with the with the brass in Liverpool? And I cracked on, it was me.
Yeah.
I opened the door, so there he was, this little ginger-haired lad, and all this paper.
Yeah, because Lily was sort of based on the girls up in, where was it, Bradford? No, where was Lutford?
No, she wasn't quite Lum Lane, Lily. I always thought Lily... It came as natural to her as drinking a cup of tea. You know what I mean? That attitude towards sex.
Yeah, yeah.
She wasn't judgmental. They were good things about Lily.
Yeah.
But also she's slightly religious because she was in the Union of Catholic Mothers.
Oh.
So...
So she was the juxtaposition.
She was a bit of a contradiction, was old little. Yeah, exactly. You know, she had these two kids and a sister who she'd call for, but nobody else could call them. You know, anybody else said anything about them, they'd be murdered.
Yeah.
And she obviously liked animals because she had a whippet. And so she was just, I don't know, I can't, people have asked me to explain it. And I said, I can't really. It was a fantasy figure.
Yeah, she just was.
Born from people I knew from my childhood. You know, there's a lot of, my auntie Chris was a clippy on the buses and she had a mouth on her, believe you me. Very glamorous, a big blonde. And so there's a little bit of my mother's very dry, you know, she'd put you down with a line.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of my Auntie Annie's piousness and just sort of, and the look was a bit dancehall sweet charity, you know, the hookers in, the dancehall hostesses, but also toned down to look, you know, in the leopard skin coat, not Bette Lynch, it wasn't that fancy.
Yeah.
Fake Versace, you know, things like lots of cheap jewellery.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And the roots in the wig, you know, she was sort of... But it was very odd. People, I mean, I still get taxi drivers saying to me, oh, an old fancy Lily.
Really?
Oh, lots of straight men did, yeah.
Wow. Because,
and I said to one cabbie, why is that? He said, because she'd drink you under the table. She'd fight you like a man. She wouldn't give a damn if you went missing for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And all this business. And I said, oh, and them legs, whoa, them legs and all this business. And you think, oh, my God. I said, but it's me you're talking to. This is very uncomfortable.
Would you ever bring her back, or that, or she's...
No, nah. Too old.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you know, I always said, I remember years ago, I said, when I'm 40, I'm packing this up. Anyway, I didn't. And then, but as I, by the time I'd reached 50, I had one foot in each camp, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then now, the last thing I did for Lily, I did a thing for Sky, only because we needed an extra character. It was one of those little crackers, you know, for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I dragged Lily out for that, and I did Panto, and that was it.
I want to talk about the early 2000s. Now, I have a vision of you down the Shadow Lounge.
Oh, God, I used to live in there.
Yeah, I know. Do you have any memories?
Oh, every night was a fab night down Shadow Lounge. I used to love it. I used to have a mate who was a male stripper, Shay. He went back to South Africa. Good pal. We go and have a meal first.
Yeah.
There was a nice sort of oyster bar, Frenchy place on Brewer Street. I don't know whether it's still there. It's that long. Funny enough, I was up there the other day doing a voiceover. I got in the car, went up, got out, went in the studio, got back in. It was like a ghost town.
Yeah.
So, and I had a flat there while I was doing Panto at the Palladium and absolutely loved it. Loved living there. Down Berwick Street, down Brewer Street. It was fabulous.
Right in the action zone. Yeah.
Loved it. You know, and of course, I've been going in Borovic's that long, the fabric shop. You know, pop your head in there. How are you?
Yeah.
And what were teenage lads and our grandfathers?
Yeah.
Used to call me Miss Whiplash.
Why?
Because the thigh length boots Lily used to wear.
Okay.
Yes, Miss Whiplash. I mean, the shame of it. I was on the batter.
So you'd always, you'd be down Shadow Lounge.
Yeah, Shadow Lounge was fabulous because there was all sorts you used to go. I mean, I used to take Cilla down there a lot. She loved Shadow Lounge.
Yeah.
So there was always, you know, like Lee used to be down there, Alexander McQueen a lot. You know, it was just, well, you know yourself, it's just a great crowd down Shadow Lounge. Yeah. And they had that little VIP room, which was like a colo.
Yeah.
Where they'd sit you in there and they put a bouncer in front of you and everybody'd stare at you.
And it was fabulous.
It was just a great club, Shadow Lounge.
Yeah.
You know, and before that, years ago, there used to be the piano bar on the corner there, and that was wonderful and all. I think it's before your time.
Yeah.
You know the alleyway between the old review bar?
Yeah,
and there's a new bar there. Well, that bar on the corner was the piano bar.
Oh.
And there was a grand piano in there, somebody playing on it, and you could get up and sing if you wanted, and it was packed.
It became Escape. Next to JoJo's.
That's right. Yeah. That's the one.
Escape. Yeah, that's it. That's gone now as well. Obviously, I mean, it's all gone, isn't it? Shadow Lounge now, I think, is... they did turn it into a pole dancing club, like a Sophisticats type thing.
Dear.
Now I think it's just empty now.
And what's happened to the review bar? Because that came the box,
that's
didn't
the box.
It?
Obviously, nothing's open this year, but God knows what's going to reopen. I don't know.
Because that's had a complete sort of refit, the
whole
review
thing,
bar.
Totally, yeah.
Because I was very friendly with Paul Raymond, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know his granddaughter.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
I love PR, loved him, honestly. He was such a smashing bloke. Used to take me to lunch at Lascargo, and I lived in a council flat then, and he'd send the rolls round. I think, oh, my God, and all the neighbours looking. And I'd get in it like an old tart. And off we'd go. And we'd just sit. I got pally with him from when I worked at JoJo's. I was extremely fond of him.
What about swanky showbiz dudes? So you're now on the telly. Lily's a superstar.
I got bored.
Yeah.
Honestly, no.
Yeah.
Honestly. And my idea of hell is a red carpet.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Really feels like work, doesn't it? It's like...
Oh, God almighty. Because you've got all that. The public on the right-hand side all screaming.
Yeah.
So for selfies and what have you. And then on the left, you've got all the press and photographers and all. So I always time it until there's somebody, I don't know, from a reality show.
Yeah.
Who's in like wearing a cobweb and a tea bag. And as soon as she goes, all the press are going, yeah, I'll leg it past quick. I'm like a whippet.
Yeah.
So a lot of these photos, you see this blur. That's me legging it past. Because I have to stand there and they go, pull, this way. Yeah, pull. And I've got this terrible, rictus, cheesy grin on my face. And I think, you're never going to use these because it... You know, you've got the big glamour puss coming up and behind me in a minute now.
From Love Island or something, yeah.
Yeah, from Love Island, half naked, you know, with boobs that could crush a building. You think, so you know, why am I standing here like this? And then, you know, you do all the press interviews and they say things to you like, so who would you like to win tonight? And half the time, I don't even know the nominees. And I go, oh, well, whoever, you know, blah, blah, blah. And what do you watch on telly? And, of course, the things I watch on telly, nobody seems to watch.
Right.
Stuff like Gotham, I was crazy for. An American Horror Story.
Oh, loved.
And Wentworth Prison. Yeah.
I loved American Horror Story.
And me. And the one with Gaga. Gaga was stunning,
love,
in it.
Love.
Because Gaga came on the Tea Time Show before she was that well known. And we're not best friends at all by any means, but we became friends, you know, little letters here and there. Yeah. And then she came on the big show, you know, when she really made it. She's such a sweet woman. Yeah. I love her.
Have you ever been out with her?
No, but I've sat in the dressing room with her for a good hour and a half. We've chewed the cud. You know, she's
great.
Oh, she's fabulous. I'm such a fan. She's wonderful. I love her.
A pop royalty now, isn't she?
Oh, she's marvellous. Yeah, she really... And Star Is Born, she was fabulous. I'm so proud of her, you know, because we had her on the tea time.
Yeah.
And she came in to rehearse in the afternoon and I said to her, God, you should sing the blues because she's playing the piano and singing. And she had this beautiful voice, and she still has got a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
And I thought, you're no Johnny Come Lately, overnight star. You're going to be something massive. And she was so quirky, and she loved things like Gypsy the musical. And there were just a lot of things we both liked that we could talk about. And I just got on so well. I genuinely adored her. I thought she was marvellous. Good luck to her.
Have you ever rubbed shoulders with the royals on the dance floor, speaking of royalty?
Oh, a few times. Oh. You know, the royal variety.
Oh, of course, yes. Up.
Yeah, you know, and you never know what to say because I've just been there blowing a bugle with my head between my legs, you know, to the Queen in the box with Cilla and Barbara Windsor when we did You Gotta Have a Gimmick.
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
And then here's the Queen, you know, along she comes and it's... I just think I find this very odd.
Yeah. But,
and often, you know, and often at charities, Camilla, she's a sweet ass. I'm very fond of her.
Yeah.
You know, I really am.
Yeah.
And you do, you know, I remember doing the Duke of Edinburgh Awards as Lily in St. James's Palace. And Prince Philip's face. And I said to him, there hasn't been the likes of me in here since Nell Gwynn, sir. Anyway, you can say that again.
They get it, though, surely, right?
Oh, they do, for God's sake. They're all human, aren't they?
Yeah. You've done a lot of panto. Does that ever get quite raucous backstage? Are there, like, big after-show parties and stuff?
We used to, years ago. I remember we did Snow White and Seven Dwarfs in Southampton. One of the cast said, this is like the Rolling Stones do Snow White.
Really?
Because I had a flat nearby, and it became party central. So, you know, we go to the pub and then back to my flat, and it was... the time of that terrible winter where we all got snowbound and we couldn't go home. So it was all, what are we going to do? I know what we'll do. All back to mine. You know, there'd be like 30 people in my flat and somebody'd be cooking a huge dinner and the booze would be getting laced down. You'd have the Seven Dwarfs there and everybody. Yeah, you know, I mean, last Cinderella we didn't because we were doing two a day, six days a week for 6 weeks. So there's no, forget it, you're just too tired. And plus I'm too old to be, you know, kicking meals in a club at 4 o'clock in the morning and then go in and do a matinee. So no, that was home to bed.
Drawn a line under that one, yeah.
Well, but the thing is, these young dancers, I say to them, go for it, you know, go out and enjoy yourself because you've got the energy. I said, I did. Look at me, I'm a wreck. I'm a burnt out wreck of a once glorious disco. Be warned. But occasionally I go out and have a drink with them, but only to the pub. You know, not till, but we used to, we always used to. There used to be a big social life. And anything, you know, when we were on tour with Annie,
yeah,
and Prisoner of Cell Block H, the musical, all these things. Because you're away from home.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Go and sit in a hotel room?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, you know, yeah, you're going to go out for a meal, you're going to go out for a drink, you're going to go to a club, you're going to end up in a skip at 7 yeah, o'clock in the morning, wondering where the hell am I, clutching a kebab.
And with nightlife being closed again now...
Oh, it's so sad.
Yeah. What impact do you think that will have on the country, on performers?
Do you know what? As you've gathered now, Jodie, I'm a big pub and club fan.
Mm.
I really am. I really, really am. I've spent my most part of my life in boozers and clubs, either working in them or drinking in them, and I love them dearly, all sorts.
Mm.
And it breaks my heart to think that the club trade is going to go under completely. It really does. and that theatres are going to be taken over by Chinese businessmen and turned into casinos. And what you know, what about everybody? What about all the crew?
Yeah.
What about makeup, wig dressers, actors, musicians, front of house staff, the cleaners, you name it, all out of work. And of course, it's got a knockdown effect because then the pubs, they're all closed, the restaurants are closed, the cabbies are doing no business. It's just a dreadful, just dreadful.
What do you think of the government handling of the nightlife sector and the curfew and the...
Well, it's been ignored.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, 10 o'clock's ridiculous.
Yeah.
What's the point of that? The virus doesn't say, right, okay, you know, I'll stay in till 10 o'clock and then I'm coming out.
Yeah.
I don't get it, really. It's like prohibition. It doesn't work. So you leave the pub at 10 o'clock. You've had a few scoops. You're up for a couple more. You'll go into a supermarket, your local corner shop, the off-licence, get booze. Ball back to mine. You know, so it's cost effective. It just doesn't work. I think it's daft. It really is.
Mm.
And all this business, you've got to have a meal or you've got to have a three-course. I don't get it. I don't understand. I really don't.
Mm.
You know, it's just very, what we need, there's no clarity in all these rules and they change every day. You know, like we're in lockdown again. And like Kent at the moment, we've had, because I've been filming, I did a series about Kent. I've just finished it now. And we were very lucky because the infection rate was extremely low while we were filming. And of course, I was in contact with so many people. So I was constantly testing myself, you know, sending off for tests. And you get your results on the internet and you're like, it's like waiting for O-level results or something. If you failed or passed,
yeah.
And you click, go negative. You go, oh, I'm negative. Because one of our crew, she was pregnant. So that was my big worry. You know, so that it was safety first for me. But I don't know, just the club scene and the pubs, will they ever recover?
Yeah.
And just when they were getting on the feet again and they get all the booze in and they get all the stock in, this happens. Bang. That's a fortune wasted again, you know.
Yeah.
I think they've been very clever. You know, they've sort of adapted to it by doing takeaways and carry out and all that and takeaway meals.
Daytime
and
parties and stuff and with meals.
Yeah, but it's not the same. You go to a pub to socialise.
No.
You know, you go to meet people, to meet your friends, to for a bit of normality, to play a game of pool or whatever. Or if you all want to watch football, you've got Sky TV there. The size of, you know, a white van, the screen. You know, but that's what it's about, socialising. It's about meeting people. And, of course, people have had that taken away from them and that's going to affect them.
Yeah.
They're going on about mental health, you know, but I don't know. I don't think this is going to change the world.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Things are never going to be the same again. And I think the sooner we get used to that and adapt, the better we'll be. But we don't know what to adapt to because we're not being given clear instructions.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do this. You can have a tattoo, but you can't hold your dying granny's hands. You think, what the... You know, hairdressers are shut again. Yeah, you can go to the dentist. you know, and yet you can sit on a tube, a packed tube. Or it's bizarre, isn't it? Yeah, but you can't go to the theatre. Although the Palladium are doing Panto this year.
Are they? Socially distant?
It's more of a variety show, you know.
Yeah.
But with all the sorts of the Panto lot all in it. I'm not doing it this. I'd already decided I wasn't doing. I've retired from Panto.
Yeah. Let's end on a jolly note. You're throwing a party. Give me three names that are on your guest list. They could be living or dead.
Oh, God, I'm throwing a party. Do you know, it's when you do press and they say, who would you invite to a dinner party, 12 people, living or dead?
Yeah, it's literally what I'm asking you.
I always say I don't have dinner parties. Who would I invite? Well, I'd invite you, of course. You
thank
come.
You. Okay, that's
who would I invite? From the Gypsy Rose Lee, because I'm very friendly with Gypsy's son, Eric. And, she'd be good value, old Gypsy. We'd have her there. And who else could we have? Somebody interesting. I know we'd have Catherine de' Medici.
Okay.
Yes. She'd teach us the fine art of poisoning.
Oh, that sounds quite useful. I like it.
Yeah, and it'd be a very small, intimate dinner party, I assume. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
I'm not keen on dinner parties, are you?
No. I like a dance.
I don't do dancing anymore. I like a little quiet, sleazy drinking club where I can get myself stuck in the corner with my cronies.
Yeah, that's where we'll do this. That sounds good. Well, Paul O'Grady, this has been your life of the party.
It sounds like that's all I've done, isn't it? Clubbing it, clubbing it, clubbing it. But it's true, that's all I have done. Yeah, from day one.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on.
Listen, it's a pleasure. And you look after yourself, do you hear?
Thank you. You too, Paul.
Oh, no, I'm safe down here in Kent. All I've got to talk to is sheep, believe you me. Listen, I'll see you soon. Take it easy, kids.
See you soon.
Ta-ra, see ya.
This has been Life of the Party with me, Jody Harsh. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't subscribed just yet, please do. There's a new episode every week. Right, see you at the next party.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.